Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness. Brought to you by Forever Family Foundation. On the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I call your name. The echo is haunting. The echo is always the same. I call your name. The echo is haunting. An echo can never be changed. So I call your name. Your name.
Hello and welcome to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation with our host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and our show tonight is sponsored by Starseed Gems, and they can be found on the web at starseedgems.com. Our guest tonight is Dr. Oliver Robinson, and this show has been pre-recorded, so please accept our apologies as we are not able to take live calls tonight. So, Bob, how about let's dive right into the interview. I know you read and you love the book, and you probably have plenty of questions for our guests.
Yes, I do. It's our pleasure to welcome Dr. Oliver Robinson. He's a psychologist and interdisciplinary thinker. He's a senior lecturer in psychology at the University of Greenwich in England. He's the author of Paths Between Head and Heart, Exploring the Harmonies of Science and Spirituality, and co-editor of A New Renaissance, Transforming Science, Spirit, and Society. He writes on matters of philosophy and spirituality, and he's interested in how the rational and empirical ethos of science and the intuitive and effective focus of spirituality can play a complementary role in balance and healthy development. His website is oliverrobinson.info, and welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, and thanks for that lovely introduction.
Yeah, and as Fran mentioned, I did enjoy the book very much. As a matter of fact, I've already given out a few copies to people I thought should read it. So, Now, many in the scientific community tend to bristle when you bring up spiritual concepts and phenomena that they consider to be paranormal. But you suggest that the perceived divide between science and spirituality is narrower than we might think. Is that a fair assessment?
I'd say that it's narrower than it's ever been. I'd say that there's still a long way to go in terms of creating true harmony between the two, in terms of, you know, the majority of scientists accepting that spirituality is something that is a natural complement to science and something that should work alongside it. But I'd say that, I mean, my discipline, for example, psychology, the openness to spirituality now compared with even 20 years ago is very different, and that the difference is such that there are a whole variety of reputable journals now that cover matters of spirituality, and I see that in other sciences too, and I think there's just generally more dialogue going on, so I'm hopeful.
Yeah, I mean, it's also interesting how some of today's modern, you know, physicists sound very spiritual when they give their talks these days. I'm sure you've noticed that.
I think that's an important point, because I feel that physics as a science, because physicists, I think, have to on a daily basis deal with radical uncertainty and the radical strangeness of reality in a way which, say, chemists or biologists don't have to at the more macro level in their sciences, are, I think, more naturally open to spiritual questions and with integrating their work with spiritual ideas. That's certainly something that I've noticed. And I think that there's still, in biology, for example, in evolutionary theory, I still see a kind of 19th century Victorian science operating.
Yeah, you know, it's a lot of people, when we talk about physics, especially quantum physics, a lot of people believe that the discovery of quantum physics actually spurred on metaphysical study. I mean, the notion that the world might not be what it seems is intriguing, which is basically the point that I think that you were just making, is that it tends to upset the apple cart in what the materialists define as reality.
So quantum physics is certainly fascinating in the sense that 100 years on from some of the key, you know, from the development of quantum physics, there is a radical lack of consensus about what it all means. I mean, in the scientific community, there are lots of different, hugely different interpretations about what the strange and weird findings at the quantum level, this kind of paradoxical findings where things can be in two places at once and teleport between two places and be entangled across vast distances, what it all means. We tend to think in the, you know, as non-scientists, that science is a kind of generally agreed body of knowledge about the universe, that we're pretty sure what we're looking at, you know, there's a general consensus about what it is and how it works, and we just kind of therefore have to accept scientific pronouncements. But that's just not true. At the most fundamental level, there's enormous disagreements and kind of lack of consensus. And quantum physics is one area, and there are lots of others as well. Obviously, the dark matter and dark energy issue is very live. No one knows what they are. They're a vast proportion of the universe. So I think science has bumped into the transcendent. I think that science has found itself encountering aspects of reality that are beyond not just the senses, but all our scientific instruments. And they're kind of having to accept a certain amount of unknowing at the moment.
Mm. You know, in reading the book, you wrote you made the argument that in our history, the periods of great scientific discovery were accompanied by spiritual exploration, and it's a good point. I never realized that. I mean, when you look around, I'm trying to figure out why that is. Do you think that we have some inherent urge within us to pursue meaning that science can't discern?
Yeah, I'd say that's exactly it. And I also say that the two tend to interweave. So yeah, you're right. So I look at the last 400 years and I show how many of the scientific leaps have been paralleled by spiritual revolutions as well. And part of the picture I want to convey is in the book is that there's a kind of simplistic view of the modern era as one of general secularization, where science and rational philosophy have risen up and spirituality has ebbed away. But that's simply not the case. That is an erroneous view of the modern era. The modern era is one of enormous spiritual ferment and experimentation, and that has been as defining of the modern world and of the postmodern world and of our Western world as the rise of science. And that if you look at, for example, the rise of chemistry in the 18th century and the romanticism is that they were kind of feeding off each other. And some of the big players in chemistry were in regular contact with some of the main romantic writers and composers and were kind of taking inspiration from their spiritual work.
Yeah. Another concept that you write about is the importance of balance. The scientific community most often looks outward to the material, and the spiritual community prefers to explore the inner life of the mind. As we look around the world today, perhaps that's the reason we seem to be globally out of sync, or like a lack of balance. Is that something you would agree with?
Yeah, I think that's certainly what I agree with. So I think that there's a general kind of cultural forgetting that health and well-being and general optimum functioning exists as a middle way between extremes, a balance of opposites, and a balance certainly of head and heart. And that we think that more and more of something, if that appears to be a good thing, is what we want. But anything, if pushed to excess, becomes unhealthy, no matter how good in moderation. So we've kind of lost that notion of balance slightly. And I think it's partially been fueled by capitalism and consumerism at their worst, when they tend to just say, you know, make more money, have more, have more, have more, with no kind of balancing point. But there are lots of other reasons as well. But yes, I mean, the book is all about balance. It's all about saying that our knowledge of reality, our health and well-being, our nature as human beings is best expressed when we take two opposites, two things that appear to be in tension, and then we manage to balance the two. And out of that comes harmony. And I use the term harmony in the book a lot because harmony is something that generally comes out of the tension of opposites. You know, a guitar string produces music precisely because it's held in tension between two opposing poles.
Yeah, it's an interesting concept, you know, that we live in a universe that has both positive and negative forces. I mean, I know that you wrote about mystics and how they often report going through a dark night of the soul, you know, on their
right.
journey to spiritual growth. And it makes sense to me because we see that physical and emotional trauma often leads to physical changes and non-physical changes. I mean, we work a lot with mediums, for example, and I always thought it was intriguing that most of the evidential mediums report childhood trauma. And, you know, people that have
right.
near-death experiences most often return with life-changing insights. And the loss of a loved one sometimes is a trigger. It results in personal exploration of things that they never would have pursued under ordinary circumstances. So is this come under the heading of a sort of positive and negative forces that are linked? Out of the negative, we can make positive?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's no doubt that in all things, everything works in balance, and positive and negative, pleasure and pain, kind of happiness and its opposite, you know, whatever that may be, suffering, you know, are intricately interlinked. And, you know, one of the things that's slightly happened in the world of spirituality is that it's been commodified to some degree. It's been turned into something that can be bought and sold in a whole range of ways. And with that has come a kind of an idealization of spirituality as the pursuit of happiness. And while that's all very well, and, you know, the pursuit of well-being is important, it's important not to pretend that just through, you know, regular meditation we become happy or something like that. It's, you know, it's not the case. What the spiritual path is about is embracing all of life as part and parcel of, you know, of whatever this mysterious life involves. You know, somehow we have to experience the dark and the light to be fully human, and absolutely inexorably they're intertwined. And I think a life well lived is one which doesn't try to erase one or the other, but tries to embrace both and see the wisdom of both.
There's some wisdom in that statement, and we are talking with Dr. Oliver Robinson. The book, The Paths Between Head and Heart, Exploring the Harmonies of Science and Spirituality. We're going to go to a quick break, and we'll return in a few minutes. Stay with us.
Starseed Gems Studios in Cocoa, Florida, fuses cremation ashes within art glass, making beautiful stones. The ashes are visible in the darkness and resemble a beautiful night sky. Starseed Gems, developed by the parents of a young man who passed away, are set in hand-sculpted silver and gold settings. Prices start at $150. Visit www.starseedgems.com or call 321-632-7770. That's www.starseedgems.com or 321-632-7770.
We all grieve in different ways, and let's face it, grief hurts. Losing a loved one is usually the hardest event we will ever face. We can throw our hands up and become hardened by our grief, or we can take positive steps to transform it. Love Knows No Death, a groundbreaking and powerful grief transformation method, can be what you've been looking for to provide some peace and understanding. It was created and written by medical doctor and professor Dr. Piero Calvi Perazzetti, and it's a combination of a self-help workbook and video course. The workbook has the power to lessen grief and foster significant healing, and has already helped countless people to not only lead productive lives, but to do so with the knowledge that they will indeed see their loved ones again. The workbook can be purchased for $19.95 on Amazon or on the foreverfamilyfoundation.org grief and loss page, where a digital version is also available for $9.95. Love knows no death. Truer words have never been spoken.
Imagine seeing spirits are spontaneously speaking indigenous Brazilian rainforest languages. Janet Mayer, a psychic medium, does just that. In her new book, Spirits, They Are Present, she opens the door to her private life in order to share her compelling, fearful, and at times humorous journey, providing evidence that when we die, we simply make a transition to another life. Spirits, They Are Present, available now at www.janetmayer.net, Amazon, and other online booksellers. Order your copy today.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a forum where individuals and families who have suffered the loss of a loved one can turn for support, information, and hope. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. The Forever Family Foundation is a joint effort of scientists, research mediums, and interested people who support the premise that life does not end with physical death. We wish to prove that the bond of the family cannot be broken even by death. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707. Or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation.
For those just tuning in, our guest this evening is Dr. Oliver Robinson. Our sponsor tonight is Starseed Gems, and they could be found on the web at starseedgems.com. Bob?
And we're back with Dr. Oliver Robinson talking about paths between head and heart. You speak in the book about ecstatic experiences and how artists, musicians, and writers have these feelings of awe. But you also make the point that then in history, scientists have also followed their intuition, which seems a little bit incongruous. You know, we don't think of scientists as following intuition, but yet there have been a lot of scientific discoveries that the scientists have attributed to intuitive experiences, right?
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, Einstein used to talk a lot about the importance of imagination and intuition in science, and how he felt that his breakthroughs were often achieved in these kind of meditative experiences he would have, where he would kind of follow an inner experience or image or train of thought into a kind of deep places. So intuition is definitely a key part of science. But what's interesting is that there's absolutely no training in science, none at all, for cultivating intuition, even though there's loads and loads of testimonies of scientists to say how important it is, this kind of pre-conscious, non-verbal sense of what might be the case, or kind of this, you know, this gut feeling. So if you want to train your intuition, if you want to train your capacity for that kind of emotional knowing, that intuitive knowing, you have to look elsewhere. So that's, I think, why scientists often tap into spiritual practice, because so often spiritual practices are explicitly or implicitly about cultivating intuition.
It's really interesting, especially when you see some spiritual leaders that have a keen interest in science. I mean, so like the Dalai Lama, you know, I mean, they must see a connection, and it goes back to what you write about the balance between the empirical, getting information from physical senses, and the transcendental, we get knowledge through feeling and intuition. I mean, that's really the point of one of the main points of your book, right? Did we lose you?
And the Dalai Lama is an important example, because now he has gone to some lengths to develop an extensive dialogue between science and spirituality, and to try and avoid making claims that might kind of subvert science, you know, about the nature of reality. Seeing as he does, you know, his spiritual life and science to be complementary, and of course, he's also very well known for distilling the spiritual life down to sort of some very central and simple principles about kindness and the pursuit of, you know, the pursuit of a life well lived in terms of, you know, the art of happiness, etc. And in many ways, the way that he puts forward his vision of spirituality fits with the view that I put forward in the book, which is one where it sits as one half, broadly, you know, simplistically put, but one half of a whole, the other half being science, you know, this kind of these two sides of human nature, these two sides of the brain, these two archetypes that seem to, like yin and yang, you know, shape us as individuals.
And you also point out that, you know, some prominent people in history like Rudolf Steiner and F.W. Myers, I mean, they believe that we can all gain access to higher worlds, to all levels of reality. And altered states of consciousness appear to be the key. So, I mean, how would you define an altered state of consciousness?
How I would define an altered state of consciousness as in any state where a person is awake. I mean, you could define dreams within altered states of consciousness, but broadly the ones which are of particular interest are the ones where there's a waking consciousness, but without the normal frame of three-dimensional space and linear time, which shape most of our waking life. And there are, as you well know, a whole range of fascinating states of consciousness, which many people who experience describe as being more real than normal waking consciousness. They have a sort of heightened reality quality and a hyper awake quality, and that there are, you know, reputable methods for achieving these. And of course, the crucial thing is that the reason why altered states of consciousness are so important as a means for accessing reality is precisely because what we refer to as physical reality is in fact just one layer of conscious reality. It is an aspect of consciousness that in my experience is like one layer in a multi-layered reality.
So, you know, many people are not aware that, just to go a little bit further with altered states of consciousness, that shamans and mystical cultures date back to the Stone Age. I mean, the fact that shamanistic practice still exists today and maybe even making a resurgence must be important, I mean, including uses of things like plant medicine. So, do you strike that as surprising that after thousands and thousands of years that things such as shamanistic practice are still flourishing today? Must be a deeper reason to that, no?
I'm sure some people see it as surprising. It's not surprising to me because I've personally pursued that path to some degree, and I've explored plant medicines. And my sense is that the fundamental truth of human existence, or at least a fundamental truth, is that whatever this, to say, this mysterious thing we call reality is, it's part of a greater reality. And what sits beyond this reality is vastly more intelligent and sentient than we are. And that we can access that. And that creating a bridge between that meta-reality and this reality is pretty much the most important thing we can do. And that has been integral to human existence since we've managed to, you know, with our archaeology and our paleontology, managed to go back 10, 20,000 years, we've found evidence of shamanistic practices. To me, that is an integral part of a healthy human culture, is to make sure that the bridge between this reality and the reality beyond is navigated.
And you mentioned that you explored the use of plant medicine, and which I find interesting, because many have suggested that researchers and scientists and anthropologists and so forth can't truly make any headway in transpersonal studies unless they themselves get involved in personal experiences, you know, have first-person insight. Like laboratory research will only get us so far but it won't get us the deeper answers. So I guess the question is, do you agree with that? And also, maybe can you tell us, if you don't mind, a little bit about your personal experience?
Yep, happy to. Certainly, I mean, what one finds in laboratories is what's in the laboratory. You know, you can study higher states of consciousness scientifically, but the tendency is to want to look at what's going on in this reality. So you can look at brain correlates or, you know, what this person's experiencing. The way of accessing the meta reality is an inner bridge, or what we as humans experience as inner. So it has to be done on the first person basis. I mean, you can talk to people about their experiences, but to know it has to be you, has to be on a first person basis. And yeah, so my experience with plant medicines was extremely important for me, because it was such a profoundly powerful experience of a greater reality. It was as though, you know, if I'd somehow detuned the neurochemistry of my brain into some mode which allowed access to all kinds of layers and of reality and of entities and of intelligent beings that otherwise I'm unaware of. And the messages that came through were simple, powerful, and important. The messages of love and of cultivating your heart, and of how so many of us dry our hearts out because we think too much and talk too much.
So, I mean, you would describe that your experience as being transformative.
Hard. Don't get me wrong. I mean, it's a hard path because you kind of have to go an awfully long way in a very short amount of time, and it's by no means easy, and it's by no means without risk. But I'm personally grateful for having explored that in a very, very safe environment. You know, I would never ever counsel taking plant medicines outside of a sacred circle with extremely experienced guide or shaman. And with full preparation and understanding about what's involved. But if you're curious to see outside the matrix, then it's worth a shot. I didn't get there until my late 30s, and I felt that I wouldn't have been ready for it any earlier.
Yeah, well, we've interviewed a number of prominent shamans today, and I just noticed that there are many of these circle ceremonies going on today, and I just except. Back in my college days in the 60s, and never, I thought those days were over, but they're far from over. I mean, people are. I think that as our world seems to be in more and more turmoil, there's this inner resurgence of people seeking out purpose and meaning in a world that seems devoid of that. And I think that things like plant medicine and other altered states of consciousness are playing a role. I mean, do you believe that experiences such as near-death experiences and deathbed visions and these things that we're learning more about today serve a purpose and an evolution of consciousness? I mean, perhaps they're moving us closer to the knowledge of life after physical death or other realms of existence?
Well, I would classify the near-death experience as a very fascinating, very important altered state of consciousness that has parallels with others. And for those who do have one, it is often very transformative, powerful. So I think that in the 21st century, the modern Western mind is constituted in such a way that we're educated to require quite strong evidence to believe in things, and that's good, but as a result we do tend to doubt an awful lot. So experiences are absolutely essential now to ensure that people to fuel belief in and pursuit of higher meaning, higher realities, etc. So whether it's by Neolithic experience or plant medicine or, you know, deep meditation or medium-based channel work, whatever it may be, that it's integral to support spiritual life, spiritual belief in this day and age. You know, we're not happy with blind faith anymore.
You know, you just reminded me, I recall reading in the book, you cited one study that grabbed my attention that showed that 100% of people that were bereaved who also used ayahuasca showed significant alleviation of symptoms during the 3 months after the study. You know, 100% seemed a bit improbable to me, but intriguing. Certainly worthy of further study. I mean, have there been other studies that were similar to that?
So that was run by iSEERS, IEERS, I believe. That was done at a place down in Peru called the Temple of the Way of Light. And they looked at a variety of outcomes, and it was grief that they found was particularly well resolved through the ayahuasca experience. And that's undoubtedly because, you know, if somebody is grieving, to know that there are higher realities and that this life or this physical reality might not be all there is, you know, is an extremely powerful direct realization. So, but it was just one study, and one would have to, you know, sort of replicate it. But it's a sign of research worldwide. I mean, it sort of was snuffed out for about 20, 30 years, and now it's coming back. In the UK, here in London, there's a really active research body now looking at ayahuasca, DMT, and a whole range of others, psilocybin, therapeutic effects of transcendent experiences, etc. I think that's important. I mean, we'll see very similar effects of the near-death experience in terms of its effect on grief, tends to alleviate a lot as well.
Absolutely. We're talking with Dr. Oliver Robinson. The book, Paths Between Head and Heart, Exploring the Harmonies of Science and Spirituality. There's more to come. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back in a few. Stay with us.
Starseed Gems Studios in Cocoa, Florida, fuses cremation ashes within art glass, making beautiful stones. The ashes are visible in the darkness and resemble a beautiful night sky. Starseed Gems, developed by the parents of a young man who passed away, are set in hand-sculpted silver and gold settings. Prices start at $150. Visit www.starseedgems.com or call 321-632-7770. That's www.starseedgems.com or 321-632-7770.
Am I Psychic is a mobile app designed using statistics, science, and parapsychological protocols to test psychic ability using fun games. Each game has two unique modes. In psychokinesis mode, influence the game using mind over matter ability. In extrasensory perception mode, guess which random option will be chosen. Am I Psychic can store your results in an anonymous database used to eventually publish in academic journals. Available on the App Store and Google Play. Go to ampsychicapp.com and be a part of proving psychic phenomena to the world. Some profits will be donated to the Rhine Research Center.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's Hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
After-death communication is an accepted occurrence in many cultures throughout the world, but for many others, proof of this phenomenon is essential, and research shows that contact helps move people through loss and grief. The Sign Registry allows people to register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to specific loved ones. Contact the Forever Family Foundation at foreverfamilyfoundation.org or go directly to thesignregistry.com.
We all grieve in different ways, and let's face it, grief hurts. Losing a loved one is usually the hardest event we will ever face. We can throw our hands up and become hardened by our grief, or we can take positive steps to transform it. Love Knows No Death, a groundbreaking and powerful grief transformation method, can be what you've been looking for to provide some peace and understanding. It was created and written by medical doctor and professor Dr. Piero Calvi Perazzetti, and it's a combination of a self-help workbook and video course. The workbook has the power to lessen grief and foster significant healing, and has already helped countless people to not only lead productive lives, but to do so with the knowledge that they will indeed see their loved ones again. The workbook can be purchased for $19.95 on Amazon or on the foreverfamilyfoundation.org grief and loss page, where a digital version is also available for $9.95. Love knows no death. Truer words have never been spoken.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation.
If you are just tuning in, we have been talking to Dr. Oliver Robinson. Our sponsor is Starseed Gems, and they can be found on the web at starseedgems.com. We want to remind our listeners to check the events page on our website, foreverfamilyfoundation.org, for all the latest events and happenings. Coming up free this month, we have on February 9th from 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern, that's 11 to noon Pacific, our online meeting for the Visionary Explorers Group. Then our first webinar of the year will be presented by Dr. Michael Grosso on February 6th at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, streaming live on your computer wherever you are in the world. Dr. Grosso recognizes the importance of understanding the mystical and the paranormal as they serve to expand our concept of the mind and accept the fact that we survive physical death. This webinar will focus on the singular case of St. Joseph of Cupertino, the man who could fly. Attendance is $6 for members, $20 for non-members. But here are some promo codes for our listeners for limited discounted seats. Members can register for any remaining free seats with the code Cupertino. Non-members can register for any remaining half-price seats with the code GROSO2019. Our annual Holiday of the Earth raffle is up and running. Enter now to win up to 5 medium readings with Forever Family Foundation certified mediums Tracy Lee Nash, Neil Zapowski, Renata Santarelli, Catherine Nadell, and Eliza Ray. The drawing is set for April 22nd, that's Earth Day, and it's only $5 to enter. And please, please, please help us keep all of our programs going by visiting our website and clicking on the donation button. It's on every single page. Because of the work we do not receive the grants and funding that all other traditional not-for-profits enjoy. You can always help us pay our bills by participating in iGive.com, Amazon.com, Amazon Smile, and great nonprofits. And follow us on YouTube for great stories and videos at youtube.com/afterlifeeducation. Back to you, Bob.
And we're back with Dr. Oliver Robinson. You mentioned... I should mention that that's one of the good things about your book is that you give a number of personal exercises, examples that we can use to help us along our way of exploration. And one caught my eye that I thought was very worthy. I mean, you mentioned a study that was done among terminally ill patients and the regrets that they had after their diagnosis. And you suggest an exercise where we should imagine that we're all told, or that we're told that we have only 12 months left to live, and then we should make a list of things we would like to do over these remaining 12 months, and then write down under each one of the reasons why we're not doing these now. So the purpose of this exercise would be helpful in determining our life purpose.
Yeah. Traditionally, societies have been quite keen on making sure that people are conscious of death. So there are a whole range of ways that societies will achieve this in the past. you know, the memento mori, all kinds of ways. In Hinduism, they would put a dot of ash on your forehead, which would in the past be even from a cremated person, but nowadays just symbolizes that. Lots of ways. And I think that to live well is to live well being conscious of both the fact that this is an ephemeral experience, a temporary experience, and that there's this mystery called death at the end of it. So that experience is about trying to remember, trying to see life in full perspective, which is, and that the full perspective is given in light of that fact. So people, you know, the brilliant book called The Top 5 Regrets of the Dying, which is the one that I mentioned in the book, which was a palliative nurse who studied people dying in hospices and would ask them, you know, what do you regret? And what she found was that the meaning of life becomes very transparent close to death. And in many ways, it's kind of contrary to the vision of success and that we're sold in sort of mainstream culture. Because, you know, one of the key regrets is that people regret working too hard. And this is one of the top regrets, you know, that they work too hard and therefore left less space for family, friends, feeling, and good times. And yet, you know, we're socialized to work like dogs, you know, to work harder and harder, and to believe that the meaning of life kind of found through hard work. And while no doubt that work is part of life tapestry, I think that again we pass the balance again, the balance of opposites slightly.
Yeah, what keeps us from, you know, failing to recognize you know, true meaning or enlightenment or understanding? I mean, is it the ego mind? We hear that often, but what do you think? Is that what holds us back?
I think that the difficulty that the modern mind has to turn off verbalized thought is part of the problem. I think the ego mind is just simply the thinking mind as applied to the self. If we try and think who we are and what we're about, we will miss who we really are and what we're about, because who we really are sits behind thought. We can observe our thoughts in meditation. So if we can observe our thoughts, we're definitely not them. But the verbalized kind of tirade of inner monologue that goes through our minds constantly it becomes quite tyrannical. And if we can't turn it off, then we're always engaged in some kind of project, because that's what thoughts always trying to correct something, sort something out, usually focusing on negative stuff. It's a problem-solving device. So it's integral, I think, essential to find life's meaning, to learn how to be in a state of waking consciousness that is not so consumed by thought.
You wrote that spirituality starts where language ends. What do you mean by that?
So there's one chapter where I look at the whole issue of language as one of the key defining things, science being utterly dependent on mathematics and written language to function, and all of its knowledge propositions exist in words and numbers. When, in fact, philosophers, theologians, mystics, many people have said that there's a whole range of things we can know that we can't put in words and numbers, that this kind of vast aspect of human experience simply can't be talked about. So the ineffable, the hard to talk about, is definitely a key aspect of spirituality. I mean, mystical experience is of course, you know, famously hard to talk about, famously hard to define. I mean, the experience of plant medicines, the experiences one has on ayahuasca are impossible to put in words. They utterly defy language. They're not even in three dimensions. They're in some sort of higher dimensional geometry that you can't talk about. So I think that there's a huge amount of spirituality that is about encountering reality beyond words, and hence, to a degree, beyond verbalized thought as well.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, because when you read the countless reports from near-death experiencers, the majority of them say that it's ineffable, that it cannot, their experience cannot be translated into language, and
that's right.
Exactly what you're saying. So, I mean, when we talk about spirituality, and obviously you've devoted quite a bit of study and research and time into the spiritual endeavors. I mean, have you come to any conclusions personally about intelligent design?
Oh, that's a very good question. The thing is, I'm not well versed in the literature that has been developed around intelligent design. And for example, you know, the books that have been written on irreducible complexity and stuff like that, I'm not well up on those. But what I will say is that science as a whole is not a total explanation of reality. It's not a full, not a theory of everything. It can never be that. It's science was designed not as a full package, not as a kind of complete solution, but as a way of taking account of the measurable, the verbalizable, the things you can point at and use as evidence, you know, the kind of the obvious and the external. And so when it theorizes about the origins of life, the idea that that a scientific theory of evolution is a complete theory of life is erroneous. It's a logical mistake that has occurred because people have forgotten that science was not designed by its designers, its progenitors, its innovators as a total solution to understanding things. It's it deals, as I say, with the kind of measurable, the external, the verbalized. So there is no doubt in my mind that there is much more to the evolution of life, and indeed the evolution of the universe, than can be framed in current biology, whether that's natural selection or, you know, the more up to date epigenetic models, which are far more complex than kind of the Darwinian approach. And the fact is that my experience is of a meta reality that is hyper intelligent, which has some kind of agentic involvement, some involvement in this reality. Some creative involvement, some concern for us as human beings as well. So for me, you know, that there's the nature and what lies beyond visible nature is all hyper intelligent.
Yeah, I think, you know, when we talk about evolution, I mean, everybody immediately, because of our education, thinks about evolution purely as physical evolution, and perhaps immensely more important is the evolution of our consciousness, you know, than physical evolution. And I think that all these things that you write about in the realms of science and spirituality are optimistically moving us closer. I think we're making strong advances in the evolution of consciousness. Is that you agree with that, or is it the opposite?
Well, I mean, you know, it's a, you know, in this, what one sees in at the moment is a amazing mixture of people who faced with the enormous challenges of being alive at the moment in a very, very interconnected world, are responding in very different ways. And one response to interconnectedness is the desire to put up walls, literally and metaphorically, and to retrench behind those walls and say, you know, I'm not going to be part of this interconnected world. I'm going to try and find kind of a local world of yesteryear. And you know, that's following a precedent to some degree. Because when at the origin of the modern era, when modernity kicked in with its emphasis on innovation and individuals and change, there was a huge reaction against it as well. So what we're seeing now is a reaction against it too. So I would say that consciousness is evolving, a global consciousness is emerging, but it is frightening, it is stressful, because, you know, our nature as human beings is changing so fast. You know, we're practically moving into a cyborg era, where we're kind of, you know, so interlinked with artificial technologies and intelligences now. It's becoming, and we're having to get used to this quicker than than a blink of an eye, really. Just smartphones based, not even 10 years ago. So, I would say that we're certainly at a very important, very challenging point in the evolution of consciousness. And I think that one of the things that will ensure it moves forward in a good way is the wide embracing of spirituality.
Yeah, and I think that you would probably agree that we'd be better off relying a bit more on our intuitive senses as opposed to total reliance on our physical senses as we move forward.
We're not going to get through this with reason alone. We need to keep developing our intellect and our reason, but learn how to develop all our other faculties as well. Deep awareness, our intuition, and our capacity to connect with the great mystery.
Well said, and we have been talking with Dr. Oliver Robinson. The highly recommended book is Paths Between Head and Heart, Exploring the Harmonies of Science and Spirituality. You will find an Amazon link on our website should you wish to purchase the book. Dr. Robinson, thank you so much for joining us today, and we look forward to your future writings and to talking with you again sometime in the future.
Well, thank you so much. It's been a great pleasure, and I look forward to chatting again sometime.
Okay, thanks. Have a good evening.
We now ask our listeners to please join us in our global peace prayer. May the universe create a channel of healing energy from all participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind. Now let us, as one consciousness, give our energy of loving thought by praying like this: to love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment. And now it's time to say,
our loved ones are only a heartbeat away,
and science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.